So I'm Meng Chen from Staking Q, and Tarun asked me to lead this discussion on extracting universal topological data from ground state wave function. So I'll give a sort of brief overview of different approaches to this problem, and probably pose some questions that I think are still open or interesting. But feel free to interrupt or correct me if I say something wrong, because I'm sure that my knowledge on this subject is quite incomplete. Okay, so the problem is to extract universal topological data from the ground state wave function. Ground state wave function. Two dimensions. So obviously, this question is very motivated by numerical simulations. So presumably, we want to develop some methods that can be applied to numerics, and that's obviously a major concern of like the criteria we use to compare different methods. So let's be clear about what we mean by universal topological data. So given this excellent introduction of Frank and Mike, I don't think he's here, on Wednesday, I don't have to say too much about topological data, but still let me define them and make sure that we're on the same page. So characterization of topological order, so everything in two dimensions. So because well, by topological phase, we mean something, mainly something with anions. So for example, there are quantum dimensions of anions. So I list this one as a separate item because, well, although they can be extracted from the S matrix, but these are very easy to obtain given the topological entangled entropy. So I listed an S matrix from which you can extract the fusion rule by using the Verlinda formula, and the T matrix. These are related to topological spin or twists of the quadriparticles. And the third thing, which is also important, and chiral central charge, we'll call that C minus. So I should mention that this thing is not completely independent of the previous two, because actually you can get a part of the central charge using a relation of S and T matrix to pi. Can everyone see? Or a more transparent way of writing that is if you can so if you know all the twists and all the quantum dimensions, you can determine the chiral central charge mod 8. But the question is whether you can determine the actual value of the central charge, not just mod 8 or mod 24.
Just to, can you just, for people who are not seeing all this, can you define the symbols?
Sure,
T matrix topological spin.
Because I'm going spin. To do that. I'm going to do that, yeah. okay, and yeah, I'm going to define these items in a moment. So idea is to obtain, okay, so we know that for bosonic topological phases, these data are sufficient to determine the topological order. Now, the idea is to obtain FST and matrices from the module transformations. And this is all done in the, okay, so let's consider a topological phase on torus. And we all know that there are degenerate ground states labeled by different anion flux running inside a torus. That's a way to understand the topological phase, topological degenerate ground states. So I'll call them A. A are different anions, anion labels. So, but you can choose to label the ground state in different ways. For example, you can choose to label any ground state by anions running in this cycle, or you can equivalently you can choose to label it in the other big cycle. This is say B. And these two bases are unitarily equivalent. So there's a basic transformation that relates these two, and this is the S matrix. This matrix is, okay, let me call this A. B, roughly speaking, schematically, that's the S matrix. And the S matrix is related to the braiding data of the topological phase. So, well, let me just give one representation of the S matrix using the topological data of the so these thetas are the topological spins of the anions.
DC.
And the T matrix a little bit subtler than the S matrix. It's related to a modular T transformation of a torus. Namely, one can imagine the following. That's first at the torus, and we open up a torus. So we have two boundaries. Still, I mean, there's an anion flux running, right? Then we hold the torus and then just twist it by 2 pi. So 2 pi twist, then glue it back. So just represent that by twist of the line. And the phase you get from this procedure is the topological spin. AB is equal to theta A times delta AB. So this theta A is clearly related to the exchange statistics of the quadratic particles, and S is related to the mutual braiding statistics of the quadratic particles. And one of the important results coming from the entanglement is that these bases are very special. They minimize the entanglement entropy in the topologically non-trivial entanglement cut. For example, these bases are local minima of the entanglement entropy of this cut. Well, it's really this one. And similarly, this basis is the entanglement cut along this direction, minimize the entanglement entropy using this cut. And these are obviously called minimum entangled states. Okay, so these are the goals. These are, well, some of the most important stuff we want to understand about the topological phase.
Oh, this should be for a broader discussion. Should we be surprised that you can get all the... There was this comment by Alexei Kitaev in the first day, which I can't understand now. It was a very general comment he made about why you should be able to get all the topological data just from the ground states. Does anyone remember? He said that you can do projector, can do filter function, and find Hamiltonian, which is some projectors, and that space
is the space of topological given a topological order, uh-huh. That space is
topological strength. But yeah, can make it more precise.
What space?
This is about the space of Hamiltonians, which give whose ground states a topological order. That space is. Really, a given topological order, that space is topological.
For a given topological order.
So there is no, there are like no non contractible loops.
Okay, so
that's why
SPDBs are classified. Taro and Max was discussing that whether the space of Hamiltonians for a given topological order is simply connected or not, right? And if that's the case, then we can imagine that just from one particular ground state, set of ground state you obtain from some Hamiltonian, you should be able to characterize the universal property of the whole topological phase.
Can one make that connection more precise? So that's does it tell you single ground state enough or any set of ground states given that this?
Oh, so you mean just to extract these?
No. I'm saying given the fact that space is contractible in Alexei Gudayev's sense, whatever he defined.
in some sense.
No, you don't have to say whatever.
I'm not even sure that the space of Hamiltonian is simply contractible. Is that proven or?
Let's say it is. So how do you go from there to arguing that is it a single ground state knows about everything or is it?
Well, one definition of topological phase is that the ground state wave functions are adiabatically connected. And right. So the question is like, can you prove these quantities are robust under adiabatic deformation of Hamiltonian?
Right.
I'm not sure a proof of
the
statement is available.
So you have a question, please ask me.
That thing is what the Spitzer one of you lived on, right? What you have been drawing. There is no clear-cut connection to the space of Hamiltonian
theory. No. Mm. Yes, but it's not here, this real space picture.
Yes, yeah, this is real space.
This is lattice. Good. This is not space of Hamiltonian. Then this, this non-contractivity here is about this torus.
Maybe I can ask a more mundane question. In the absence of Alexei Gudayev, I'm not sure what I said on the first one. But second of all, the question I had was, is it surprising that it's enough that you can extract all this data just from a torus rather than some kind of...
It's supposed to be, I think it's supposed to be a non-trivial result that you can extract all these data from torus. Because naively, you would imagine that I have to look at all hygienous surfaces to get all the data. But it turns out that, okay, if you accept the axioms or the results of the topological quantum field theory, then all the moderate transformations on hygienous torus can be obtained from just torus.
So what about even more simpler manifold, let's say cylinder or just like a sphere? Can you just do
cylinder, like a sphere?
No. So you don't need to have the model defined on torus to extract all of this data. It's just more convenient.
It's more convenient, right.
But even if it's on a sphere, there's still ways that you can do to extract this complex data. These complex data are recorded kind of locally.
Right.
You will be able to extract the data even if your manifold is simpler as torus.
How do you do it on a sphere?
How do you do it on a sphere?
Let's see. I think at least on a cylinder, I know how to do that.
Well, yeah, the cylinder is kind of like.
On a sphere, can you do this shotgun lens wave function overlap thing? No.
There's no degenerate grounds.
I think you generally believe it's true, the statement, but on a sphere, you should be able to do it. And
on a sphere?
On a sphere, you should be able to do it. I think this promising the ground state, and there's a. Maybe I thought you were going to talk about it later, but this is work by Zhang Wanhao.
For a
class of systems, he can argue that just using a single ground state on, say, plane, infinite plane.
But that's, that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about. But that requires a little bit more digression into a problem.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure that works in practice. But
there's a question in principle if they are.
Principle. Well, in principle, if you have the ground state wave function, you can probably,
right,
by looking at like operator algebra, you can extract.
Right. Everything should be there.
The quality particle excitations.
Yeah, but you can try to construct some operators just using ground state. That's what he's doing by.
Okay, let me pull that question down, and that's can you extract?
Yeah.
Extract these quantities from single ground state wave.
Yeah. That's the well. I mean, when you
yeah, that's.
Well, it's being handled the wave function, I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the obvious question, but let me continue with the torus story.
So,
and except that we all believe TKFT, then that's enough to get everything from even you worry about higher genus torus or higher genus surfaces. So I'll just roughly divide all these different methods into two categories. One is I call entanglement based. I mean, these are not very strict like classes of methods. They kind of overlap in many ways. But let me just, for convenience, let me call them. One is entanglement based. And these work extremely well on the cylinder geometry. And thanks to the DMRG algorithm. And one reason for that is DMRG naturally picks the minimum entangled states as a ground state on a torus. On an infinite, well, let's say on a cylinder.
On a long enough cylinder.
On a long enough cylinder, yeah.
What is the meaning of infinite? Is it really like a torus then?
It's kind of assuming that the ground state is the tensor you use to characterize the ground state is the same, and you start from a translation invariant n stars for the ground state wave function. And is that right? I mean, yeah.
I think
that's like torus.
Probably because it's kind of like the limit of long and long.
So you ignore the boundary condition.
Long and long is limitless. I think you get it by taking long.
You ignore the boundary conditions. I mean, torus, you use periodic boundary conditions, but here you just ignore the boundary conditions in this direction. So you preserve.
So you mean you probably assume it's torus?
It's not really a torus. Basically, you have these Wilson lines.
I have wave function. Can't really give an arbitrary infinite wave function. Find a rule for constructing the infinite wave function. The rule is a matrix box.
Yeah. So you have these Wilson loops operator that, I mean, you can just do and take it. Imagine you take it to infinite and doesn't cost any energy. It's,
and what was wrong with the torus being translationally invariant along the torus?
Sorry, can you say that again?
There was nothing wrong with the torus itself being translationally invariant.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong. Yeah.
So for the DMRG, there is something wrong with the torus, that it's terribly inefficient to get DMRG on the torus, but it's very efficient on the cylinder.
Yeah, it's more a practical
question.
If you have torus, when you make an entanglement cut, you have two boundaries. Mm-hmm. That if you have to store some information, you are storing in boundaries in your computer. You have two boundaries, you have to store it twice.
Oh, it's just ice.
So, so it's hard to, I mean, it's generally difficult to extract anything non-local from numerics, but the DMG, DMRG comes very naturally with the entanglement data, the entanglement spectrum and the Schmidt decomposition. So let me first just talk about one method to calculate T-matrix from ground state on Taurus. That's momentum polarization. And the idea is that this was 2012, and that which I think it has become sort of a standard method to choose on a cylinder. So the idea that you take a ground state A and just do a Schmidt decomposition. Using this entanglement cut. And well, this method requires you have a translation invariant along this direction. So let's say you have a translation operator along ty, and there are quantum numbers, momentum quantum numbers associated with ty. And then you can just calculate the average value of the momentum on the Schmidt state. And well, these are Schmidt states and labeled by alpha. Lambda is a weight. So this is the total momentum on y on the Schmidt state, which turned out to be given by, let me write it this way. Square plus h of a minus 24, and some higher order corrections. So the leading piece is something proportional to L square, and on the continuum, you can argue that this is related to the Hall viscosity of the quantum fluid. I'm not sure what you can make on the finite lattice. And then this is a topological spin. This is related to theta by 2 pi I h of a. Okay, all these things are mod 1. C is the central charge, chirocentric charge. So just by doing this, you can extract many useful things. For example, in quantum Hall system, you can get the Hall viscosity, which tells you the shift. And then in general, you can get topological spin and central charge. How do you see this equation? Well, so one way to derive it is imagine really you cut it. You make a physical cut first and then glue it back. And you know, due to this bulk edge correspondence, you know that there are some kind of edge modes on the cylinder, on the edge. And then when you glue back, you can figure out what's the wave function of these two conformal field theories and derive this formula. Well, this was derived in this paper using this technique. But I mean, intuitively, you do expect this result. But by doing a twist, you get the topological spin. And this paper kind of formalizes this idea, which was beautiful.
And then you get the full center charge, or is it?
Sorry?
Center charge is the center charge, there's no mod.
Mod 24, in this case.
Okay.
Because so all these things are defined mod 1.
Is also,
yeah, these are faces. So
this is some like trace Roy. This is some like trace Roy EO.
Let me write it. It's a trace of ty, but in one of the, I don't know, call the right half, maybe, just on the Schmidt states.
That's m, or what?
M is just this quantity. M is momentum polarization.
Is the trick is that ty is a local operator?
Yeah.
You can measure its expectation of your
state. So ty is the translation just on half of a cylinder. If you do the whole cylinder, of course, you don't get anything. But if you just do it on half of a cylinder, then it's kind of like twisting a cylinder by 2 pi. That's the idea. And this has been quite successfully applied to many model wave functions and actual calculations from DMRG, I think.
So how do you extract the subleading term? Is there a subtraction scheme? So leading term is L by square, there's subleading term, it's like...
Yeah, so one way to do that is you calculate on, for example, M of A, and then compare it with the vacuum, and then you'll cancel this state. Or you can just do finite size extrapolation, because this thing's also interesting. This guy for quantum Hall system tells you the shift. And it's a leading piece, it's the largest thing you can get from the momentum correlation. And these are much smaller and much harder to obtain in practice.
So does this work on tables?
Well, this working in general, but yeah.
Assume take the
tunnels
to be very, very large,
yeah.
It gets harder and harder to extract.
Well, this is Ly. This is just size in the y direction.
So, I mean, one would have, if it has been mysterious that, you know, if you make this, you know, miles long, then it still knows that it's a tortoise. Is there something that sort of
encounters the... Well, so you can do this on a finite cylinder. You don't have to really have a tortoise to do this. This works on a finite cylinder. This method was originally derived for a finite cylinder. Like in this paper, it's Tu and actually Frank and
so
Xiao
Liang. So the ease of reading of this topological information doesn't really know at all about the geometry.
Sorry, can you say it again?
The ease of how you extract the topological information, you say, does not care about the geometry.
Well, the geometry still matters. For example, different, if you're thinking about some specific topological phase, and on a finite cylinder, you may only get certain topological ground states fixed by boundary conditions. And of course, the finite size effect of the boundary still comes in to this fraction if you do it on a finite size system. But you can apply it to an infinite, well, this infinite DMRG algorithm, and then what you get is really infinite, I think, in one direction. And you only care about finite size correction from the other, the compact direction.
Yeah. Suppose I was to do this on a real torus, could it work?
I don't think so, because the real torus, you have to do this,
yes.
And then you get two boundaries and they cancel each other. So or either you have to probably cut it, like you have to make the couplings along one of the cut zero and then do it. But that's really making it a cylinder.
Oh, OK. So I'm just mystified by the infinite cylinder. So suppose you had a finite cylinder?
Finite cylinder is OK. You can just twist half of it, right? But on a torus, you cannot twist half of a torus with only one boundary.
So would it work on a finite cylinder?
Yeah, it works on a finite cylinder.
You probably get additional collections that are like even much
relaxed
over time.
Yeah. You get, well, this is what be like.
But I'm
what do you even mean though by can you do it? Like, I mean.
Would it work?
Like if you actually take one of these systems and cut them, and then like how do you, you know, want to glue
Yeah,
it?
You can.
You know, you've already done some kind of process where you decohered your states, so.
Because there's a way to do it on a torus, but that requires you modify Hamiltonian and really do the Dan twist as an adiabatic barrier phase.
I'm okay with this procedure, but suppose you want to do it on a cylinder, a real finite cylinder.
Yeah.
I mean, there are fewer ground states. You generate fewer ground states on a finite cylinder than on a torus, right? Because
of boundary conditions.
Yeah.
But if it's a chiral phase, then you can actually recover all the states on a finite cylinder just by playing with a boundary in gapless edge modes.
Should I worry about the gapless boundary?
If it's far, then should it be okay. If it's a large cylinder, then it's okay. But there are problems with, you know, non-chiral topological phases where these boundaries are gapped and you cannot recover all the topological sectors.
So suppose I have a toric code.
Yeah.
And see, I was doing this infinite DMRG. Could I get the spin of the terminal? Or?
I think so. I think this has been done.
So the reason you choose a cylinder is that after cylinder, after this entanglement cut, you have a real surface and you have an entanglement surface. And then you want to do a twist. So you're twisting this real surface, which has a chiral, some kind of chiral coated particle attached to it, as well as you're twisting the entanglement cuts. So the phase does not necessarily cancel each other. So if you do the same thing to the torus, you actually cut the two real surfaces, then you have two chiral coated particles going in the opposite direction. If you do a twist, you're measuring the spin of the coated particle. They can, the phase, they generally cancel each other. So on a torus, it's problematic. But there's some other modular transformation you can do on a torus so that these phases won't cancel each other. Like Shogun's,
Well, that's a different,
yes,
a different modular
transformation. But I think the spirit is pretty much similar.
Okay, since we have already got into this topic, let me mention another way to do it on a torus, I mean, regardless of whether it's very practical. But the idea is that, I mean, we have some lattice Hamiltonian on torus. For example, it's a square lattice. Well, I'm not going to draw square lattice on torus. And imagine that it's wrapped up. So to actually do a modular transformation, you can just move the bounds. For example, I mean, what you want to do is to shear the lattice until it comes back. So you can just weaken this bound and strengthen this one. So this one becomes weaker and this one becomes stronger. And then you keep doing this until it comes back to the original lattice. So this is really a deformation of the Hamiltonian. It's not just something on the ground state wave function. And by doing this and calculate the T as a modular, as an adiabatic barrier phase related to this process, you can do it on torus and also get all the spins.
So when you do that, can you do it as a discrete shift of the bonds, or do you have to try to do it continuously?
You do have to do it continuously. Well, I mean, like many final steps. If you do it discretely, it seems like you're introducing a lot of error into your calculation.
So if you do it continuously, you know, you may have to be pretty careful about how you strengthen and weaken bonds to avoid
it. Indeed, you have to make sure that you don't have like zero modes coming up on the on this line. Otherwise, you don't have adiabaticity. Right. So that's basically a deformation of the definition of modular transformation on torus, and just follow that definition and do an adiabatic barrier phase calculation and get all the results.
So are you just going to do it on one wire?
Yeah. This is following the picture that I drew here. You cut the torus. Imagine you cut torus here, and then just connect the bonds slightly differently.
But then this is twisted by 2 pi?
Yeah, so then you have to do it.
Twisting just by by a delta theta?
This is one step, and you have to do it all the way until you come back.
Has anyone ever actually done
this? Well, we did it for free fermions. Too bad, so we cannot do it.
Yeah.
So we don't know how to do it. Well, we are not really professional numerics. But we can do it for free.
Just do it over insights. N columns,
right.
Have it in circumference and cylinder, and just spread it out a bit. It's less.
So unfortunately, it's not. So you may imagine that it's uniform. I mean, it's translation invariant, so each step gives you the same phase. And then you can just do one step. But it turns out that so the phase is even in some of these modular transformations on some of the sectors, but it's not even in general. So for some of these T's, I mean, in torus, you have the T matrix, a whole matrix. Some of them are not really evenly distributed in each step. So you do have to do the holes.
Is there some theory of that? Like, in the sense that there should be some reason that how, I don't know, different sectors act. Continuum way of thinking, there must be some reason.
Would they even continue?
I mean, it's evenly distributed for in each step. So if that's like evenly distributed in each step, you have to do like LY steps, basically, to recover the full dentist. But imagine each of them gives you the same barrier phase and you can just do one of the steps. But it turns out that's not generally true. You do have to do the whole thing.
So do you have to do time revolution or can you do it as a
separate? It's adiabatic. It's adiabatic barrier phase. So you don't have to do time revolution.
You don't have to do time revolution. You just get the
ground state.
Term and all the ground states along some grid of sequences.
Exactly, yeah. And so it's a ground state calculation.
Many ground state.
A lot of ground state calculation. So it would be nice if you can just do it by discrete steps, but somehow that doesn't work.
So there's no way to do S. I believe S transformation is much harder to.
Well, if you can do Dan twist, you get everything, right? If you can do Dan twist in two directions, you get S by just multiply that.
Yeah. But it's hard to imagine S in this way. That's what I was saying.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Tau to minus one over tau.
That's not discrete. So this way you can get, we have talked about the Dan twist. And S is somehow very different from T. And the method to calculate S is given here already. So if you find the two sets of minimally entangled states related to two different cuts, and then you just do overlap. And that will give you S. But there are subtleties here, obviously, because, you can imagine that you get these different states, but they come with some random phase. So your S matrix, you have some random phase related to the redefinition of these MES spaces. So, but you can at least fix the basis of this cut and this cut, the relative phase between them, by using the symmetry of a lattice. Imagine a lattice has a pi over 2 rotation symmetry, a 90-degree rotation symmetry. Then you can fix the relative phase of this cut and this cut by using a rotation. However, that still doesn't fix the phase of each one of them. For example, you can just redefine these bases by some random phase, and then your S matrix will be conjugated by a diagonal phase matrix. But I think, Tyrone and, there's a way to resolve it by doing a module transformation, doing a different module transformation, right? You do this one, and then you do a diagonal one. So this is this one, this is this cut, and then you do a third cut, which goes diagonally. And that presumably should resolve it, I believe. That's their quite recent paper, I think.
So without rotational symmetry?
Without the symmetry.
So without rotational symmetry, you can fix everything?
S matrix,
definitely.
But at T, you have this, at least.
T, you have some
different
methods.
I really don't know how to do it without 2 pi over T symmetry using the entanglement based method. This
But how do you fix a ground state, the vacuum vector? Is that by just looking at the S matrix you get and identify a column with all positive entries?
That's okay.
Right.
Can't you fix these phases also just by, requiring the S matrix to satisfy the relation?
Oh yeah, that's another idea.
S squared being the charge conjugation and ST cubed equaling M squared.
That's another idea that you require S matrix to be symmetric, first of all, obviously, and satisfy the Linder formula. And that turns out to be quite a strong constraint on S matrix. And in many cases, I'm not claiming you can do it for everything.
That's how you free angle crash trace system.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit confused. They have to use that relation, ST cube, we are saying?
No, so they have to use, I'm not sure about Lukasz and.
Well, I think they might use the ST cube thing.
Yeah. So Xiaogang and some of his students in the paper claim that you can fix S matrix by two things basically. S is symmetric. And second, S satisfies the Verlinder formula. Which relates fusion to S matrix. So it's so somehow if you just sum up these S matrix elements of S matrix in this way, you get an integer. And by combining these two, you can fix S matrix. Even when that's obtained in a completely random basis, and not even the minimum tangle basis. But I don't know more than this. But yeah, but you can use some TKFT constraints to fix S matrix. Even you get something that's screwed up by faces. And that's also a way to resolve.
But if we don't have T, then you can't use those units.
Well, so this well, is, there's this no T here.
This is different.
Yeah. So,
Are you claiming that you also need to know the fusion beforehand to
no,
fix this?
No,
and
you just need to.
Or just the fact that they're integers.
Integer, yeah. It's kind of weird, but.
Yeah, it's not obvious.
Is there can there be several discrete choices?
I don't know. There's no proof or anything. It's just. I mean, it's like, okay, let's play with these constraints and see whether you can get S matrix. And in many cases.
But he had a proof for general cases? Okay, then just a.
Just a recipe, like practical recipe.
Non-degenerate fusion or something like that?
Non-degenerate fusion.
Like that, and it's 0 or 1?
Probably not.
Here's an example. There are any problem to be generated here. Not with this problem, but other things. Let's make it like that.
Yeah, okay. And so there's another class of methods, which is I'll call it wave function overlap. Wave function overlap, and has less to do with entanglement. I think this was developed by Lucas and Giffrey in. And also several papers from Xiaogang. Too many, I cannot list them. So I'll just list one of them. Mei and Xiaogang. One representative of Xiaogang's papers. So the idea that to use pi over 2, well, for S matrix, you can just do a pi over 2 rotation on lattice, because we assume that these two bases are related by pi over 2 rotation, if you do have this symmetry. But that just gives you an S matrix. How do we get a T matrix? OK, I should say that this idea was also in the very first paper of Tyrone and Frank. So what you do is to, first of all, you still have to have the MES to begin with. And then you do a pi over 3 rotation. So let me write down the equations. So is pi over 3 rotation. And turns out this guy, well, pi over 3 rotation turns out to be just the same as doing a Dan twist and then doing inverse S matrix. So by doing this, you get a product of S and T in one shot. But then you still have this problem. You still have this problem that you have these faces floating around in your MES spaces. And Giffrey and Lukasz claim that you can resolve all these ambiguities.
But here the starting point is already MES spaces. You have
AMES. Already MES,
so
MES spaces.
That required some measurement of entanglement to begin with, right?
Well, so they discuss this method in the context of infinite DMRG, I think. Then you have this they have states available.
Yeah, but in general.
In general, you have to, I don't know.
Wondering DMRG.
Right, you have to minimize entanglement entropy property. I don't know any other way to get that.
Right.
Yeah. But if you have these bases available, then you can do this. And if, this is assuming that the lattice has a six-fold rotation symmetry, which you have for triangular honeycomb and Kagami. Especially for Kagami, you have that. So, okay. But so in their discussion, there's an implicit, I'm not sure implicit, but there's an assumption that you know which one is an identity sector. And in the example that they discuss, you can identify the vacuum sector by just looking at the symmetry quantum number. But in general, I think you still have to probably. I'm not sure that how you.
Do you know more details of their?
Well, yeah. So the example they look at, maybe Bella knows more about this. Because the example you look at is a chiral spin liquid, I think. A chiral spin liquid.
Yeah,
chiral
spin liquid is easy to tell which one.
Right. So you have two ground states, one S. This is a semion, and semion carries spin 1/2. So we can just look at the spin quantum number and identify the ground state. And once you identify the ground state, you can systematically resolve the phase ambiguities. So that's sort of implicit in this method. And
I mean, in this case, so if you cut this lambda in half, the entanglement spectrum carries on that integral half integral of
right. And so, yeah, in that case,
in general, I'm not sure. Not clear. You probably have to combine some of these other techniques.
I think they had other cases. They did this for
particle.
Well, particle, obviously, everything works. Not they did it for Kitaya planning from model 2, and I don't know how they would do it there. Presumably you have a sufficiently small number of ground states that you can try that. Take a guess and see if you get
okay. Right.
Whether you get a lot of concepts.
That's true. I mean, if
you.
I mean, if you have a guess of what you would obtain.
Presumably this is solved by inspection.
Yeah, or you know, for example, Valinda formula, you can play with.
You can check consistency.
Yeah, you can check consistencies of the result you get and see whether they make sense. So this method, I mean, the good thing about this method is that you can do it on a torus. It doesn't really matter. You have to do it on torus, I think. But because
it's
this is.
Wave function, but in infinite cylinder.
Yeah, exactly. So. But these are just some rotation operator on the system. So you can evaluate the value of this guy in, for example, variational Monte Carlo. So you can apply it on variational Monte Carlo quite efficiently and identify the topological order of some trial wave function you obtain from, for example, Goodswiller projection. And that has been tested in this paper. But there's a problem with that. On a finite size system, this is discussed in this paper of May and Wen. On a finite size system, if you apply this rotation operator and actually calculate the ground state, for example, for the Goodswiller projected trial wave function, you get a universal piece, let me just write it this way, and you get not just some random phase, you get a big suppression, exponential suppression, just because you're changing a wave function and doing an overlap. So the overlap is generally small, for example, for the trial wave functions. So for relatively large systems, it just becomes difficult because overlap is small. And there are several ways to overcome this problem. So one way is to make use of the tensor network. Imagine the system, assume the system has a tensor network representation, and then you can just contract the tensors until you reach a point where the size is small. This was.
So just to, is it TS inverse AB?
TS AB.
So it's, is there some way to take the ratio of, say, AB to CD and.
Oh, you can cancel this guy, obviously. This is the same for all the states. But the practical problem is this is just number is small. So it's just hard to.
It's above no, no, no.
Yeah, it's.
Can't even calculate ratio of AB over CD.
Directly, you mean?
Directly in relation to Monte Carlo.
I'm not sure you can do that. I don't think so. Well, I'm not an expert.
Why don't you just write down that as a sum of probabilities? Sometimes you can. Similar thing from mutual information, for example.
Okay. So the question is, can you directly calculate the ratio of these things, so cancel out this overall number? But for example, in variation of Monte Carlo, I'm not sure you can do that.
Can also be complex.
Yeah, it is complex. Well, so I already said that you have these faces, and that's already a problem. The ambiguous faces in the MEN spaces, and now you have an additional problem of a huge error bar.
But this doesn't happen for the S matrix, for S, this doesn't happen.
Well, it happens for S matrix. Doesn't really matter which you calculate, which one you get. Yeah. So in general, this is complex. Let's just put it this way.
And when you were talking about SAD doing this minimal entangled states and other prefactors like that there too, which I explained this
previously. Well, so. But that part I don't quite.
If you have fixed point wave functions.
If you have fixed point wave functions.
Then the exponential will be very
rare. Yeah, right.
So I think that formula is assuming fixed point wave functions.
Really?
But
then if
any
do is new and tangible, like we never calculate this thing. Get us metals not working. You never calculate it. You have some basic, you have truncal asks. What should I rotate?
It has a symmetry of pi over 3 rotations.
That's some unitary matrix.
Otherwise, it wouldn't work.
That's a different matrix. Instead
of saying, exactly, pi over
3.
Probably just not unitary matrix.
Only there's things, but R is unitary. Yeah, we're implementing, they are just trying to figure out the unitary matrix which relates this MES to this MES.
We like only
imagine
that because
everything's on
like
some common. Hard part is finding the unit and then you should write actually find it. That is e to the power minus n.
There's the same.
Minus n squared.
What do I do? If you know.
Oh, I see.
Extra factors.
Okay.
I see. Look at this problem.
So it's not actually.
Okay. So. This is what I learned just learned from Mike. The reason you get these things because this involves T, not just S. And T involves a shearing of the wave function that obviously gives you
such a pressure.
Probably not 6G. If the correlation for the effective mirror, only then they are going to get this thing. Then you have a fixed point wave function. Then you don't have
it. Okay.
I would think that that's the correlation then.
They claim you have this for S also, so I don't fully understand.
If you have degenerate ground states on, say, Torres, of some actual Hamiltonian, isn't that system differs, different ground states will differ from each other, degenerate ground states, at a distance less than correlation length. They are allowed to differ. They won't be exactly degenerate. You're saying they would not differ. That's strange. Less than correlation if you don't know about
the
natural order.
Otherwise, local observables.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Local observables.
Right.
Quite similar.
So why is it, this is sharing?
The sharing thing, probably. Yeah, so can.
Pi over three is the sewage, right?
Yeah, so it's not actually a pi over three, not giving you.
Presumably, if you do a symmetry transformation, you should get a unitary matrix.
Yes.
That's okay.
And,
so just variation, being variation.
But the shearing thing indeed gives you a problem.
But they're not shearing compute or pi over three, are they? You're not shearing it around 60 degrees.
So I think the overlap in like the shearing Vidal approach is all of one, you know, up to numerical collections. Yeah. Not all of one, it's one.
It's unitary, is what you're saying.
This is a weird thing in this paper. I guess I just don't understand what these two were doing in the variation Monte Carlo. Okay, that's. We have gone through many of these methods. Okay, so one thing that I haven't mentioned is that all these are for bosonic systems. And I think for fermionic systems, we have to think more about what these module transformations mean in the first place.
So say what you think are the main issues?
Okay. That's one of the.
What are the big issues? People in this workshop, programmers and all for the next 2.5 months.
Is it clear that when there's a projective symmetry group, you won't accidentally make a mistake?
So the one question that Mike just said is that because we're doing these calculations on a system with a spatial or lattice symmetry group, assuming that symmetry group has an interesting fractionalization, does that interfere with the calculation or not? That's a very practical question, although I haven't seen an example where it really comes up. Second question is, can you get a central charge just from the wave function? Not just mod 8 or mod 24. Can you get a value, actual value, integer value, or a central charge?
What if it was a dense angle?
No.
What
do you have in mind to look at?
Isn't it supposed to be, so suppose you have a chiral state, mm-hmm. Isn't it supposed to be, isn't the entanglement spectrum supposed to be the edge spectrum?
Yeah, but that requires you can identify the edge CFT, right?
But even if you have a spectrum of CFT, you can calculate central charge without knowing what CFT is.
But you'd have to be able to distinguish the universal part of the spectrum from the non-universal part, like what the count.
Suppose we are on large systems, right? Suppose
common connectivity of that.
I mean, the non-universal part is presumably separated by a gap, by an entanglement gap. Is that believed to be?
It's believed, yeah. It's considered general. In certain cases, it's usually depend on plotting your entanglement spectrum in some single way.
But can the non-universal part change the central charge? So then one can calculate thermal conductivity of this.
How do you calculate?
You need to know local decomposition of the Hamiltonian to calculate the conductivity.
You know it, right? You have some lattice Hamiltonian. You just project onto the edge. And you don't even have to have it on you. You have to just define some local stress tensor in terms of some spin operators. And just calculate unequal time energy correlation function.
In principle.
Or something's wrong here. I'm trying to understand.
I think the question, to rephrase it a little bit, is if you just assume you're in the limit where, you know, your entanglement spectra is just the CFT, you don't have any garbage in there, can you identify, can you get the central charge? I mean, so it's saying, is the central charge something you can compute from the vacuum character of the CFT? I don't actually know what the answer to that is.
Well, if you just have entangled spectrum, how do you have to know the CFT, right?
If you have entangled spectrum,
yeah.
you can identify the character, the vacuum character of your CFD.
Okay.
And the density of states determined.
This,
density of state.
Oh, no, no, you're talking about the chiral part.
There would be enough. There's like a simple charge.
That would get you the central
charge. No, but that would give you the total central charge of the chiral part. You just need the density of states when you see left and see right.
Yeah.
But we need a C left minus C right.
Well, we're assuming chiral, I guess, so that you don't have to worry about
C right. But it can always, you can always add to the entanglement spectrum a non-chiral CFT without changing the whole topological order. It'd be like an edge reconstruction.
Sure.
But one
thing, we're trying to make life easier.
On a continuum, if you put a conical defect somewhere and then measure the momentum polarization in the region around the conical defect, so the angular momentum bound to a conical defect is proportional to the chiral central charge.
Wait, there's also something super mundane where you can just put this
you
in
can
the
model.
Yeah, and measure the entropy and call it good.
Wait.
It still doesn't give you the chiral curve.
Yeah, the same.
It's not really obvious. Yeah. I mean, you imagine you make a cut along the parallel to a cylinder and just measure it. The same problem.
If you have a PEPS, you can also measure the entropy
of the mid state. Yeah. Oh, so actually, you know, like the edge reconstruction issue, is that something that you. Well, okay, so a statement that you could say is that you have the bulk PQFT and the chiral central charge of the edge defined the topological phase. And from that perspective, you wouldn't actually just say, well, let me just change the central charge by messing with the edge. So.
Building the chiral part of the topological phase.
Well. But do you actually have, I mean, can you actually do something to the bulk where it resembles edge reconstruction without having the same thing occurring on the actual edge?
Yeah.
So,
maybe just look at the computational value of momentum and find the temperature in the edge, you know, how the edge spectrum can.
If there wasn't, then you would. See that and see right would both be invariants.
By that temperature?
The claim
no,
is that they're not.
So you can go like use yeah.
The minus
EA.
I don't know what it is.
But that's the same thing. Looking at thermal conductivity, it minus beta E times some property, like momentum or energy.
But thermal conductivity, so in the CFT, you can do specific heat, that's what usually people do, that's putting, you know, that's looking at the energy, but that gives both C right plus C left. What if you looked at the momentum, wouldn't that give you C right minus C left?
That's what the momentum polarization is.
That's essentially what the momentum polarization is.
Still, that gives you just mod 24, at
that's
best.
But suppose, can you get it without mod 24?
That's the question we started.
That's a good question.
Is it all defined without mod 24?
That's another good question. It's not clear.
Yeah, I mean, if you can only extract it mod 24, then is it really well defined?
Would that be
beyond mod 24?
Physically, I mean, edge, you can calculate thermal conductivity and whole C's.
You can conduct both C left and C right?
Just by looking at the thermal Hall conductivity, you get C minus,
get
C left minus.
Oh, yeah, thermal Hall is the difference. Okay.
Yeah, right. So that's.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how much you can get from just a ground state wave function without going to finite temperature.
No, but we are looking at the entanglement spectrum. So the entanglement spectrum, we can put a finite temperature, right?
You have the edge spectrum.
Yeah.
That's some actual, think of some fictitious Hamiltonian. And
okay.
Play around with it. You calculate unequal time growth or wherever you want to get it.
I guess part of the concern here with this, why you only get C mod 24, is that some of these, you know, like, momentum is only defined as modulo 2 pi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you are looking at, if you have the entanglement spectrum and you have some low energy part of the entanglement spectrum, then there, you know, presumably all the momenta are one over L. So there is no issue with mod. Maybe there is no issue with mod 2 pi there. I guess you could have different k points here, have things clustered around 0 and pi, but.
I mean, if you have like large, clean, large entanglement spectrum, universal, like CFT-like spectrum, you might be able to get something.
But I mean, we are kind of asking maybe an in-principle question. Can you get C rather than C mod 24?
In principle, if you have the whole CFT spectrum, you can get anything, presumably. But question is that now you only have like several low-lying states, so you don't have access to the descendant state. For example, that's mixed up. For example, that's mixed up with the bulk contributions. You only have like several low-lying states with a corresponding to primaries. Sure, how much you can, how far you can go.
So this question then CFT, if I give you low-lying states, even if it's two CFTs with the same factor, but they differ after a while, or say, could central charge be different here, essentially, you're asking?
Well, central charge, if you can count like a density of states higher up, you can know the central charge, right?
Yeah, if you can do, you know.
But not chi, right? There's C and plus here.
Oh, yeah. Right. Comes back to this.
You could find the low-lying states as a function of some twist, you know, on the CFT boundary conditions. Then you read out C very quickly. But that's it. You know, usually, if you do CFT on the circle and you twist boundary conditions, certainly if you want to do that, then you follow your grounded energy as a function of that. Mm-hmm. And that's all that easily gives you the central charge. Probably. Certainly then it's cleanest, I'm not sure.
So we're talking about twisting the boundary conditions on the boundary. So you have a circle boundary to a cylinder or something, and you're saying twist the boundary conditions on the boundary.
Yeah, so in MicroCFT this, you know, you would let's say go from the virtual to run model for your program, continuously. And then if you could mimic that in let's say cutting a sphere, you're doing
is there something spectrum. You can do on the bulk with the boundary conditions, or do you just have to have a very good
twisting boundary condition on the edge, just different sector in the bulk, right?
You're in a diamond spectra a sphere cut into two pieces, and you can somehow build in this.
Yeah,
space.
Yeah,
sure.
So twisting boundary condition on the edge is just going to different topological sector in the bulk. But I think the contribution to the ground state energy from standard charge is same for all different sectors, and it's only the spin.
Okay.
But I can.
I'm not still sure, but can you please make it more maybe everyone follows the algorithm?
Well, maybe I'll try to clarify here. So. Not sure why I understand.
Well, I guess for if you know, if you just do just apart from all this, just do CFT for let's say free from you know, and you twist from the virtuous to
right.
Ramon, then you pick up the one over 16 in the Ramon sector.
But that's not same charge, right? That's
No, but if you do it continuously, you get a curve of energy versus twist angle, and that curve fits to a parabola, and that parabola has central charge in there.
They're defining momentum, so lattice system, so momentum is lattice momentum, but what kind of momentum?
Good. So that's a subtle point. But maybe what you can do is, so you have, well, let's look at the entanglement spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You will have you know, spaced by one URL, and Memento also spaced by one URL, but they can be localized near different points in momentum space. Mm-hmm. Right? You can have branches, maybe like one momentum equals zero and one momentum equals pile of three. So maybe just subtract out that, you know, that pile of three is related to some lattice. Okay. But, you know, what really the continuum momentum is different from pile of three.
Right.
So maybe just, you know, just do that subtraction and
so
that seems like a simple issue. Oh, I mean, minus. Yeah. I mean, the reason it doesn't work just when you do this global right, thing is that you kind of you put in
Oh, really? Can you elaborate on that? Yeah, sure.
So you have this question written on the board, can you extract S&T from a single ground state, but did you remember, did you answer that question, or did you post it? I don't remember.
I posted it. I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Do you know? Oh, okay.
So anyone has some idea? Given a single, okay. Let me say a few words. I'm supposed to say a few words about that. I just forgot. So there's some recent paper that very theoretical construction, but the idea that you start from a ground state wave function. Because we know that anions are basically, okay, so let's say you have a wave function on a sphere, on a disk, and we look at all possible operator algebra inside the disk. Because presumably in an anionic system, all the interesting ones are generated by just Wilson loops around the disk. And by looking at operator algebra, we can extract the quadriparticle excitations. So all the local operators, basically, they form a certain algebra. And there are some requirement, well, not really in a position to discuss the details of the method, but the idea that you have to identify these operators, which only measure the topological charge in that disk.
So back to the, so given some ground state, you're looking at some expectation value of commutators of some objects.
Yeah, I assume.
But do you need to put an anion in the center of that disk? Or?
No.
Sorry, what was the statement?
Statement? Well, the question is, can you identify the polyparticles just from a single ground state?
Yeah, what did this say about it? What did this say about that?
I mean, first of all the anion excitations are defined by the operator algebras on a disk. If we don't worry about how you get that numerically, so that's just definition of anions, one way to define anions. If you can carry out that program on a wave function, you get all the information.
You need
local operators.
How exactly are you using the wave function in this? I'm not sure what you're saying. Because imagine it was just the torque ground state wave function on a disk or something. I know the operators constructed out of sigma z's and sigma x's. What am I doing to the operators? I mean, I'm acting the operators on the wave function on this disk region. How do I determine which ones are the Wilson loops that wrap around a small, if I have only the wave function, I know nothing about excitations?
Has anyone actually read the paper in that detail to understand? Otherwise, maybe you should just tell what the paper is. The
paper is,
okay.
I should be
well,
blindly.
Right, I might even write it down. Right name,
Carl,
huh?
Good
H. Juwan Har's paper. People should just read the paper because I don't fully understand.
You might be here later.
Could you pronounce that name again?
It is Har. And there's a calculation about toric code, so
okay.
That's probably the only thing you can do in practice.
Yeah, it should be, or do you have something about 3D, 3 dimension topological spaces?
3D?
Synthesizing RAM and something.
If people are interested, I mean, I haven't prepared anything for that. But
maybe
we should
business offline.
Yeah, maybe we can business offline.
Any more comments, questions? Anything?
I see like lunch is calling up on people.
It's not like this.
Those are the only words.
Very, 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 very.
Okay.